I go, hey, look, this is something that you guys are into. Let's check it out. Let's go see what I think about it. I think there's something to be said about having a perspective, knowing your voice, and watching your perspective broaden and take your fans with you. I would love to tell you and be like one of those Instagram guys, like, you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you ate six eggs, and it's all easy. There's days where I fail. Like, I'm getting terrible at like laying in bed and trying to work from my phone, thinking I'm working, which is great, but I'm still in bed, which is the opposite of what every CEO tells you.
I want to kind of ask you too, do you have any advice for content creators that maybe we haven't touched on today?
Yeah, give up. That's what I say.
Hello and welcome to the Pauline Content Creator Spotlight. Today I'm with Flobo Boyce, and honestly, I'm super excited to talk to you because I had you on with the podcast, and now we get to bring you on this show too.
The fact that you have a different new show is pretty cool. I mean, like, how many times have we all have podcasts that kind of fade away, but you're like added on to it. So props, man. I love what you're doing.
Thank you so much. And I think that's a good kind of point there. As a content creator, we often have struggles like with keeping things going. When I first had you on a few years back on the other show, I see a lot of other creators made podcasts around that same time, and they, phased out after 6 months or after 20 episodes, they stopped.
Yeah, it's funny. You just said years ago. I'm like, it was years ago. What is
Yeah.
time? But you're right. Pod fading is a real thing, and creative fading is a real thing too. And it's interesting to see who is still with it, because I always say consistency is key. And so, props for what you're doing. And this is like episode, what, 2,000, 3 billion? Like,
Yeah.
what are you on?
Well, this is the new show. I think you're number seven, actually.
I like seven. Seven's
Yeah.
good.
Yeah. Seven's a lucky number. So why don't we break the ice and have you share something about yourself that no one knows about you?
No one knows about me? Woo. I'm deathly afraid of spiders, but that's not really relevant to the show, is it? Because of anything else. I would say that I fell into content creating. It's what I do now, and it's my career, but it was a mistake. Before that was comedy, but when I was a kid, what I really wanted to be was a Power Ranger. But after that, I wanted to be a financial analyst, and so I was all about making money and balance sheets and ledgers. But now I'm doing the other opposite. I'm working without money, so that's the thing that most people don't know about me. I wasn't always a camera forward person. I was super shy behind the scenes. I was a heavy set kid. I didn't really want to be in front of the camera, but my whole life now is in front of the camera.
I didn't know if you'd remember that icebreaker from the podcast or not, since it's been a while, but I do remember you talking about your fitness journey and just your life beforehand, and I appreciate you kind of sharing that on this show as well. Obviously, the first question here was actually what got you started as a content creator, so you fell into it. How did that happen?
It was one of those things where I dabbled with like radio in my basement when I was a kid. I don't really consider that, because that was like the pre-podcast era. That was like, internet radio was like new and fresh. But the modern era came from comedy. So I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm currently lapsed, but I still think I am. And I was trying to increase my brand. I was going to go on the road, and I was having struggles getting on the road or getting booked on the road. And then one day I was frustrated, and I was like, I went, I did a to whom it may concern email. Why aren't you booking me? Which is very unprofessional, but I don't care. I wanted answers. And the answer I got was, hey, look, Flo, you're hilarious, but you don't have a following. Like, we have to make sure as comedy promoters, when we book you, that you can pack a room. And they look at my social media. I had like 1,000 followers on Instagram, and I go, okay, I get it. And so that really started the idea of, well, how do I get myself out there in front of people so they can see me, the little bits and pieces of the free stuff. And so I rolled into hosting. I was an after show host at AfterBuzz for years. Wrestling became my niche because I was a wrestling fan. But then I kind of branched out into baseball, and then I was also a wedding vendor, so people saw me in real life and stuff, and I started to record some of that too. But all that came from was trying to find ways to get me booked as a comic. But what happened with the pandemic and comedy clubs being closed is I kind of went into content creation almost full time.
Yeah, and just my intro was kind of sparse, so just for people's context, I mean, DJ, comedian, even game announcer, like what's the word? Game
Shoutcaster.
shoutcaster, yeah. And on top of that, now content creator. And from what I recall, you have at least three different shows. You were giving me props for having two, but you have like three or four.
I mean, it's because one time I had like nine during the pandemic when I was living in my bedroom. But yeah, there's Draped in Gold, which is a wrestling show that's based on the NXT show. And then there's Flobo's Side on Netflix, where I give what I call alternate reviews of Netflix originals. And by alternate, I don't say something's good or bad. I say, hey, this is a good show for your mom or your best friend or your significant other. I'm like, who is this show for? And then the flagship is New Amsterdam Radio. It's a show kind of like this. Where we sit with content creators and entrepreneurs. And the episode's out Thursday about what makes them tick and what tools they use. So it's kind of like those are the big three now. And of course, I'm a contributor to the Black Baseball Mixtape. If anyone has seen me this year, I was featured in an MLB commercial for the MLB Play app. So my face has been in 75 million homes, which is kind of creepy if you think about it. But that was kind of cool that baseball became another thing throughout this.
I love that. And I just wanted to give people the context because you are in the trenches. You're making content. You are doing a lot. And obviously you've grown now. Like you got that following a lot more. And do you think that you're going to make more comedic content too?
2024 is the answer for that because I have been writing more, I guess, for me. And this is kind of like, I'll take a step back. I'll totally pull back the curtain, 100%. So when I was going through comedy the first time, pre-pandemic, I had a day job. And having a day job has its own challenges because you only have a certain amount of time for yourself, but it was a good discipline for me to get up in the morning and say, look, I'm going to give 8 hours of work plus 2 hours commuting to XYZ Corp. And then I'm going to go in moonlight like Batman as a comedian. But since then I'm self-employed. So between trying to find DJ clients and trying to get esports gigs and commercials and all that stuff, all the time I have left is I'm working for myself, and myself is a terrible boss. So it's actually more challenging to work, say, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. and go, all right, now it's time to do comedy. But it's a priority still. I don't want to let that slip away completely. So next year, I'm taking my notebook, which I have here at my desk. I write new jokes when they come at, up in the moment, to go out there and go back on the road, at least to get album 3 in the can.
Definitely kind of keep those fleeting ideas, writing them down. And I'm definitely seeing the little signs that I need to have you back on the podcast and talk about your polymathic life because there's a lot going on. You have a lot of multiple phases there. I love that.
Yeah.
And as a content creator as well, there are the three types, the written, audio, and video. I kind of have a feeling I think I know the answer, but what is your favorite type to make?
It is because it's hard, right? Because it's like almost like a three-headed hydra. If you make a podcast that's on YouTube and you take the time to write a format, then you're doing all three, right? And I'm a big proponent of podcast formats because frankly, that's the only reason why anyone checks out a new podcast. Either you're famous or your format's really cool, your niche is really cool. But I always consider myself a writer first. And that's kind of like where things come from. Like I don't go into a podcast unless I have a structure of how I can do this differently or differently to the point to my brand or what have you. I love the fact there's a visual component. You'll notice on my sports podcast when I'm not talking, I'll gesture and use the instrument to make it at least visually interesting for someone who's watching because frankly, they don't have to watch your face. So give them credit for watching your face, but it all comes down to the story. It all comes down to the conflict. It all comes down to the structure and running the time. That's a script. That's the written word.
I love that question too, because you just don't necessarily know what the answer would be. I thought since you do so much video, the video might be your kind of main pillar, but writing is my main pillar too. I get what you're saying, where when I have something I want to create, I start out with writing out the idea first. And then if I make it to a podcast or a video, that's what'll happen. But that's like, it's what you anchor to and what you are able to express creatively.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, sometimes you may get the flash of vision of what this would look like, but I'm always going, what is being said or what's the order? And I end up writing it down anyway. It always comes back to that.
You were talking about on your show as well, like when you interview creators, entrepreneurs, what tools did he use and that kind of thing. And that's one reason why I made this show. I love talking shop and just talking to other creators, seeing that energy. And like now I'm doing the hand gestures, like you said, like that's why I like doing videos so people can see that. But I wanted to go to this next question here. What is the tools that you use as a content creator for repurposing or creation? What do you like to do?
Yeah, prayer is a tool, and so is desperation. No, I'm just kidding. Mama, help.
I'm a tool.
Exactly. We're all tools. I think it depends. It changes and evolves. So let me get all that stuff out the way. Because frankly, you could do it yourself. But the more you automate, it's really going to be the one to help you out the most. I'm a moderate automator. There's some people that have I have a Calendly, for example, for booking now, because I used to go back and forth and I don't have time for that. When it comes down to making clips, I used to, a year ago, if you asked me this question, I would use Headliner, which would make audiograms, which is like a little picture with a little waveforms and stuff for images. But now I think the bread and butter is Opus Clip. It's an AI, a machine learning app that takes your long form video podcast and tries to basically clip out what they think it's important. And then you can stack it and arrange it how you want to. You have different audience members. It gets it right 8.10 out of time. Sometimes you got to tweak things. Sometimes you got to say, oh, that's not what I really want. But they give you enough options that if I had to sit and think or log my video while recording, this is a cool scene, that's a cool scene, it probably wouldn't be nearly as efficient. And it might be demotivating, right? Because a podcast for me is an hour long. And so doing that could be like a 2-hour endeavor. Whereas if I'm running through Opus and Opus says, hey, look, here are 15 clips we like. And I go, nope, 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 nope. That's cool. Nope, nope. Then I've cut that down. And that kind of encourages me to make more. But I think those are the big two. Even if things change in between there, I think having an automator, and that is my scheduler and Calendly, Grammarly, if we're getting my text and script right, and definitely Opus. Those are the big three. I use those almost daily when it comes to getting my things out there.
Totally agree. I think especially too, usually my clips are about 80% of the time good. I'm a little less picky with a lot of them. I'll put any excess ones in a separate folder to use for later kind of thing. But 80% is kind of the use case for me too. Absolutely. But there's so many tools out there and it's amazing. You do a lot of multi-streaming too, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I have so many niche audiences that are kind of like separate and disparate. So like on my YouTube page, that's where I keep all my video content and my Facebook pages, and I have things for that. So New Amsterdam has its own page. I personally have my own page, and I kind of one the same. I am New Amsterdam. But on the shoutcasting side, the esports side, what's in a period called esports winter. A lot of jobs have contracted. A lot of advertisers are jumping ship. We're seeing some orgs collapse. And so there's not a lot of work out there comparatively during the pandemic, right? And so I want to tell these people, hey, look, I'm not working a Rocket League show, but I can still maintain a presence with a show environment. So I stream my same shows to that too. So if anyone's scrolling, they go, oh, wait, it's Novantas, what they call me. Hey, Novantas over here talking about wrestling, but he's super hype as he would have been if he's doing that as well. I use StreamYard. I'm a StreamYard guy. I got in super early with their development and I got to be one of their, like, at the time, spotlight users. But there's so many apps that do that now. I mean, Riverside, Restream, Melon, like, there's a lot of ones that do it. I'm just a StreamYard person, but it's granted me so many cool ways to present other segments of my audience with what I do.
And I love asking that question too, because there are so many tools out there, like you said, Restream and that kind of thing. And depending on whether or not you're making podcast content or gaming content, there's a difference as well. I've always kind of felt like StreamYard could do gaming content, but a lot of people view it more as the podcasting place, if you will.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I think, one, you're right, because the actual tools are there. I just think that StreamYard very early in its like marketing growth decided to be a cooler, slicker version to Zoom, which at the time was really needed because Zoom was like a black hole. There was like no design element. There was nothing to do it. And it is, and it works. But now you're seeing that with that media convergence, right? Because now streamers are now also influencers, which are now podcasters too. And you're seeing a lot more slicker platforms like Riverside or Restream say, hey, look, we're going to embrace, or even Trovo Live, embrace that and go, hey, look, we're going to lean into that more. So compared to those guys, StreamYard looks like a little bit like the old high-waisted jean dad who's showing up to the party late. But I think that at the time in 1920, it was a smart move for them to say, hey, look, we can at least run the business side, the client side, the webinar side of things.
I love that, because kind of like how you were pretty early on with StreamYard, I was pretty early on with Riverside. I talked to the founder back in 2020 and I started working with them back in 2021 or something like that. And I talked to the StreamYard team over at Podcast Movement this year, and they were obviously really knowledgeable in the space. I just love seeing these tools, and I start wanting to do more gaming content myself and start doing more multi-streaming. So I figured it was good to ask.
It's the future now. Now that, I won't say open, but now Instagram's API, can I play with these programs now? Like, it's a wrap, man. It's, if you can do anything in those space, like me, I can't play video games and talk because I'm terrible at games to begin with. But if you can make that work, then why the heck not?
Yeah. Well, I kind of changing the subject here a little bit. I was going to ask, can you share your favorite story that's happened to you as a creator?
Oh, yeah, I can do that for sure. So even though I own platforms myself, New Amsterdam Radio and Draped in Gold, which is a wrestling show, this year specifically, I leaned into more baseball content. There's a show called the Black Baseball Mixtape, which I'm a contributor for. I don't own it. I don't run it. It's Mark Cheatham. Mark Cheats is what they call him. It's his brand. But last April, when I was kind of burnt out from wrestling, because if you guys know anything about WWE, WrestleMania's in April. It's kind of like their season finale, right? So I was kind of like, woo, what a year. I want to do something else, which coincides with the beginning of baseball season. I was a content creator with that, just dabbling a bit. I was going to parks, I was going to stadiums, I was taking photos of myself at the places here which you can go. It's cool. I was on the podcast. So to answer your question, there is a league out there in Dubai called Baseball United, and they were having a showcase this past Thanksgiving, and we had the CEO, Cash Shake, on the Black Baseball Mixtape podcast. I guess we asked some questions nobody really was asking from our perspective. We were saying, hey, look, representation, what do the team names mean? Why the colors? Are you a hip-hop guy? Things like that. And Cash was so impressed, he invited us out there to cover the showcase in Dubai on Thanksgiving. Now, Cheats couldn't go. So I went on behalf of another platform, which is pretty wild, to cover this showcase halfway across the world. I probably would have gone to Dubai on my own, but to be able to do that on content, part of their content core, to really like transcribe and document this thing, I mean, it was pretty cool.
That's amazing. And I love how you were able to use this opportunity as a way to grow too. And you probably met so many people over there as well.
Oh, yeah. The content core was basically nine of us that were just in all different aspects of baseball coverage. And I was kind of new to the game because I was kind of like hanging on to the Black Baseball Mixtape. But seeing technique and the tools they use, I learned apps. I shared like Wi-Fi tricks. It really was – I'm not sure that was the intent of having us and like learning that way. But just us running as a pack, we became to like iron sharpens iron all across the board. We're making arrangements like, hey, man, next time your team's in town, I'll give you a call. That kind of deal.
That's super cool. And I also just love the fact that you have so many things going on. Like you have so many things, you're spinning many, many different plates. You're actually the first guest that's been on both of my shows. So thank you so much for doing that.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. And I wanted to mention that because being polymathic and being a polymathic creator are two different things, but they definitely have a lot of overlapping areas. And I'm just kind of curious too, as a polymathic creator, someone who's doing many different types of content, different series as well, different, and all these different things, how do you manage that time? How do you make it happen?
There, it's really a day per day thing. I would love to tell you and be like one of those Instagram guys, like you get about 4 o'clock in the morning, you ate six eggs, and it's all easy. There's days where I fail. Like I'm getting terrible at like laying in bed and trying to work from my phone, thinking I'm working, which is great, but I'm still in bed, which is the opposite of what every CEO tells you. So the thing about spinning plates is that's a pretty much a good analogy, is that not every plate needs the same attention all the time. So there's sometimes like when I was in Dubai, it was all baseball because I was there covering the baseball game. I wasn't really writing a book at that time, but there's enough stories there. I can say, oh, that would be good for the next book. And so you really have to judge and roll that out. New Amsterdam is every Thursday. So that's the structure of that. A new episode either has to come out every Thursday or I have to go on the show and say, no episode Thursday. That's a strong pillar. Or every Sunday, got to call the family. Mom, Dad, I'm alive. That doesn't change. Yeah. But Mondays and Tuesdays were kind of fluid to say, you know what? I feel like working on my body today. I'm going to go hit the gym. I'm going to go for a run instead. Like, for example, this is, as we record this on a Tuesday this morning, I went for a walk. I cleaned up my kitchen. So I did the whole internal personal admin stuff. I got to meet a friend for a possibility for a hospitality arrangement next year when I go on tour again. So business meetings in the afternoon. That doesn't happen every single day, but it's also part of the mix because the biggest mistake I see we do, and I mean, polymath is that we have a schedule that is so rigid that when something comes in there, it's all ruined. We get mad. Yeah. We sit there and go, oh, I can't believe my car had a flat today. Like you can't plan that at all. So you got to be able to be a little flexible.
No, that's totally right. And I feel like having a fluid schedule is really important, but also having certain days that you work on certain type of content. So if you have many different plates, like you said, Thursday's the day that you do this. Like I'm trying to make sure these interviews go out on Thursday, for example. Like Thursday is my content repurposing phase or like focus. And then Tuesdays may be the day for making blog posts. Wednesdays are the swimming day. Like having those days, but sometimes things pop up. Something happened last week at the end of the week that really threw off all trajectory of what I was doing. So everything I was planning on doing that day ended up getting pushed to Saturday. Saturday got a little too crazy. Had to push it to Sunday, then Monday. And you have to be able to work with your energy levels, your ability to actually produce, and be nice to yourself. Like, don't give yourself too hard of a time if you fail.
Oh, yeah. We're the worst at ourselves. We are totally the worst employees for ourselves. But...
Yeah. You take a lot of content, you make it into clips, you make things, like you mentioned earlier about taking like a video, make it into a blog post too. What does content repurposing mean to you?
So there is definitely the textbook definition, right? Taking a piece of content and finding different avenues for that content, but sometimes recontextualizing content is equally as important. So you may have an audience that prefers long form stuff. Like I know a lot of my wrestling fans love the longer podcasts because they like to put things on while they're working or commuting or whatever. But I'm showing clips to my mom. That's not her thing, right? So you got to find out summary, a short little blog snippet, that sort of thing. But definitely the audience as well. So you have to use my hidden podcast because it's almost audio only. It's like 6 minutes long. Flobo saw it on Netflix. When I first started that show, it was out of spite because I was going to be a guest for a podcast, but the guy kept pushing it back the same time. So 3 weeks had gone by, 3 Tuesdays had gone by where I was setting up in the pandemic, ready to go. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, hey man, next week. And I go, okay, I'm going to do it. And then it became like this show where I was just going to have like a show like this, and I talk about the review of the show, to have like what would I would do, what would I recast it as. And I realized over time that the audience was global, so the movies had to change. I had to make sure it was relevant to them, and it didn't really care about the graphics. They wanted just the audio and distill it. So it was a recontextualizing of the same show for that audience to make sure, hey, look, if you just want the facts, ma'am, 6 minutes in and out, I like it. Tell your friend about it. And if you want the long form stuff, yes, I'll compile them all. I'll have a special bonus episode with segments for you guys later on.
There's 2 points I wanted to jump off of there. First off, having like a micro show. So on the podcast, I have the micro podcast, which are just short episodes that I do alongside the long stuff. And I think that a lot of podcasts out there, they don't necessarily think about their show as being like a channel, their podcast as being like a channel. On YouTube, you're not going to have just one type of video, more than likely. You may, but most times you make multiple different series. You might have multiple different kind of things you want to make. But people get so rigid in the way they conceptualize their podcast.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be a two-pronged approach. I think a lot of casual YouTubers, I guess the people we think about when we think about a web user, short, sweet, get it on with it. If it's not funny in 15 seconds, if it's not informative in a minute, I'm scrolling on, you don't waste my time. But there are some people, the power users, that like will use YouTube as their TV, you know, at lunchtime, sit down and open up a long-form documentary and chill out. And so you really owe it to yourself to do a post. I know as a creator, it feels kind of disingenuous how YouTube pushes shorts. Like, hey, man, you want a short? Make it a short? Want to make it short? But it does help, though. If you say, hey, look, I can get my point across in these short little bit of clips, those are ones I found out I'm sharing with future stakeholders when they go, tell me more about your show than the actual episode top to bottom.
Yeah, and when I was thinking about short form content, I was still thinking like the still 5 to 10 minutes versus like an hour long, rather than like a YouTube short per se. But I do get what you mean. And the other thing I was gonna jump off of is this idea of globalizing your content, and I don't think a lot of people put enough thought into that, or translocalizing the content as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for creators, we try to rely on the individuality of ourselves, and that's good because you're special in your own way. But sometimes when you do that territorial stuff, like, oh, you wouldn't get it if you're not from my neighborhood. Yeah, your neighborhood might be thinking it's great, but then there may be some kind of universal truths in there that people may agree with. Going back to a Netflix example, yeah, I could sit here and say, I'm a car action race car movie guy, so get with it, bro. But over time, you would say, well, if that was the personality I have and the fans are jumping on that, let me show you what my perspective would be with a romantic comedy. Hey, look, my number one audience group is actually true, believe it. My number one download group for that show is in Angola. And Angola loves it when I talk about Asian movies, kung fu movies, like it's not necessarily in Asian language, but like Asian martial art films. So every so often I go back to that. I go, hey, look, this is something that you guys are into. Let's check it out. Let's go see what I think about it. I think there's something to be said about having a perspective, knowing your voice, and watching your perspective broaden and take your fans with you. It means the world. I'll give you a quick story. I used to work at American Idol years ago, seasons 12 and 13, or when it was at Fox, and we would ask singers, hey, why do you think you're the next American Idol? And everyone would say, well, I can sing anything. And I go, that's great. But if everyone says that, you're not special. What you'll see with superstars is that they pick a genre and then they break out of that genre. So Taylor Swift was a country's music singer. Now she's not anymore. You know what I mean? Madonna was pop, but now she can do EDM. She can do all that kind of things as well. Beyonce too. Beyonce was R&B. She's a pop star now. And so, yeah, have a perspective. Love the perspective, but see what your audience wants. Try it out. Make sure you put yourself in a comfortable position and take your audience with you.
And I think that's a good point for creators as well. Pick a genre or pick a niche, if you will, at first. Even if you're a polymathic creator like us and you want to do many different things, pick something that you could first off learn the skills and get better at it and put in the reps. And then from there, you could expand beyond.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know that sometimes people say that's like the curse of being in so many pots at once and you're not sure which one you're giving it to. But ultimately, I think people have a certain idea of what you are. Then you can play with those conception later on.
I think that's really important for gaming creators too, because it's a pretty easy analogy where, like, hey, I started out with Call of Duty or Rocket League or Apex, and you're known as that Apex creator or the Fortnite creator, but then you could expand beyond that and you could do other shooters, other battle royales, but then you could do racing. Then you could also maybe do farming simulators, for example, too.
Absolutely. I think a lot of creators in that space particularly get scared when they get their audience, they love them, and you're known as a Rocket League guy. And when you have that one, I don't know, Fall Guys or Stumble Guys stream and no one shows up, you go, okay, we got to go back, because you know what I mean? Like, it is scary to do that again, to try other things. But in entertainment, we always say, don't let your act get stale. And that goes true for anyone in front of a camera, even behind a camera. If you write a certain kind of novels, write different. My first book was a neo-Western, because I hated Westerns growing up. Like, I grew up in Brooklyn and didn't understand what a Western was. And so I wrote my own, because definitely was challenging for me to do something that I wasn't comfortable with, to see what would the audience would think.
Star Wars is kind of like a neo-Western in a way too, or sci-fi Western.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a space opera, science Western.
Sci-fi opera. So I want to kind of ask you too, do you have any advice for content creators that maybe we haven't touched on today?
Yeah, give up. That's what I say. Just quit, man. Let's get the 900 pound gorilla out of the way. Is there money in this? Yes. But you got to understand, it's like a casino, right? They're only going to put the people who are in the jackpot on the walls. There are lots of people who've tried and failed. Now, some people will say, no, first you'll succeed, try again. And I guess I feel that way too, because all my successes come after failures. But don't be afraid to walk away. Don't be afraid to get a day job. Don't be afraid to do something in almost a mentee role, where you just say, I'm going to shut up and listen to a new technique before coming back. Like, that is part of the journey you don't get to see, because we're so used to having the project finished. There's like times where I'm an editor by trade. My literal master's degree is in editing. But in 2010, editing was on an Avid machine with an EDL and then going online. Like, now you can edit more complex pieces on CapCut, which is something that came after me. But I had to say, look, Flobo, you have a paper degree in this. You have to tell yourself you don't know nothing about that. And having to learn that all over again, I think that's when you get people get kind of confused and go, oh man, I have 20 years of experience, or, oh, my buddy was rich, how come I can't do this? So don't chase the money, chase getting better. Have to take a day job if you have to. You have to eat, you have to feed your kids, but it's still a path to success out there.
And keep in mind too, a lot of people, just kind of going off that point, some people really want to be creators and they know it in their heart they need to be a creator. But most people come to content creation with that money in mind and they think, oh, I'm going to make a lot of money off of this. That's not the goal. The goal is not, money will come if you do it long enough, maybe. But you don't know. Sometimes you could be doing it for 5 to 10 years and you're still not making money. So don't do it for that reason. I create content because I know I want to create content. I know I have an idea I want to share with the world. And you're going to hit rough times. And if you're not able to push past those rough times, you're not going to be able to keep going.
Yeah, you got to ask yourself, every piece of content you make, is it educational, is it informative, or is it helpful? If it's none of those things, it's just you being like, hey guys, what's up, it's your boy. Well, that's going to be a harder path to get, unless you somehow are so dynamic as a person. You know, unless you're like somebody who's like, I don't know, you have like, I don't know, you live in a circus, family of circus acts, and it's your Hey Guys blog is a unique experience. That's entertaining, but you can't be someone who's a normal guy and go, here's normal guy talking about movies, or here's some friends just chatting about life, because if my life is normal, I'm not tuning into your life that's normal. Now, please do not interpret that by being something you're not. Do not lie to get yourself over ahead. But what I'm saying is, you have to have a little bit of a niche, a little bit of a hook. You have to understand, any piece you give out there has to be entertaining, informative, or helpful.
Definitely. I totally agree with that. And I just wanted to share a tiny little anecdote before we wrap up here too, before the last question, is that just recently, just this last week, I was having issues with my editor where anytime I would open a project, it would not open at all. I would try to, like, I would click into the project, the app would shut down and crash. DaVinci Resolve, for those who are wondering. It was crazy. The first time it happened, I had already rendered a video. I wanted to make a tweak. I just decided, you know what? It's not perfect, but it's good a video. I'm going to put it out there. The second time it happened, I had to redo the entire interview. That was fine. Obviously, the guest was cool, but that sucked. The third time it happened, I was 99% done. I was putting the cherry on top. I left the app open all day until I was able to finish it, and it crashed right as I was putting the cherry on top. And then when I tried to open it back up, it wouldn't open. And so what I had to do was take my SSD out, put a new one in, reinstall Windows completely, then reinstall DaVinci Resolve, and now it works.
Oh, wow.
But that was a whole process that was really horrible. And as a content creator, if I wasn't determined to do it, I probably would have quit because it was just so stressful. And it was one of those things where time after time and time again, it kept fighting me. But I have a reason to put it out there. So as long as you have a reason to keep pushing forward, that's what's key.
And also, you got to have a network of people who are in your space, too. I bet if you went to your boys and was like, yo, man, DaVinci Resolve is killing me. People were like, what? Okay. Stop doing that. You're like, no, you don't understand. Like, also need someone to make sure you're sane as well. But, dude, that's rough. I use Resolve, too. Because, again, I come from, like, Final Cut was my Final Cut 7. Was like, that's how old I am. Remember Final Cut 7 before 10? I was my first ever editing program. So everything has been through that lens. That's why I tend to gravitate towards, like, Premiere over Avid, even though I went to an Avid school. But yeah, when those programs were ACT UP, Resolve in this case too, out because there's also a lag on the voiceover tool in Resolve. Ooh. They still haven't figured that out yet. I felt like I was lost in the cave. So that's another thing. Always have a network of people inside your sphere that you can learn from and just ask questions and bounce things off of.
Definitely. And yeah, I started out with, I think, Adobe CS5 back in the day.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Let's go. Yeah. OG.
Yeah, right? So, final question here. What do you have coming down the line that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, well, I feel like I just did a TED Talk, but no, this year is definitely my ballpark tour continues. I'm trying to go to all 30. I'm at 18 now, so I want to get some more under my belt. And speaking of baseball, my old professors, well, they're not old, my mature professors from school are releasing a documentary on baseball scouts. It's called Fielding Dreams, a celebration of baseball scouts. They are premiering it in Cooperstown in January, and they asked me to introduce the film to everyone. So I'm kind of excited to go out here and do that. But the idea in 2024 is go back to comedy, do more writing, and hopefully when I'm on your show a third time, I have more stuff to talk about.
Well, it'll be the second time on that show, but yes, you'll be with me again. I love that. And so where can people find you online?
Yeah, at Flobo Boys on X. I'm also on Blue Sky at Flobo Boys, and Flobito.com is the website to check that out and to see everything all on one page.
Well, I will have links in the description for you as always. And this is Dustin Poly Innovator and Flobito Boys on the Creator Spotlight. Thank you. Hey, we both got our names on our shirts.
Gotta sell the merch, man.
Yeah.